Chapter 24. Everyone's heads followed the sound, except for Ianthe Tridentarius, who was lounging in her chair with one eyebrow raised, and Nibirius Tern, who had issued the challenge. He vaulted to the table in one lustrous movement, swinging himself up to stand on it, even as Judith Deuteros very carefully eased her cavalier down into an empty seat. He looked down at them all with a hard sneer, and the one stupid curl that he always managed to get right in the middle of his forehead.
"No, you don't," said Corona Beth faintly.
"Yes, he does," said Ianthe, rising to stand. "You need a facility key, don't you? Here's our chance. I suspect we won't be given a better."
There was an expression of grim alarm rising on Judith Deuteros's face. She had both hands across the oozing slit on her cavalier's chest, and she had paused in her work out of sheer annoyance.
"You have no cause," she said.
"Neither did you, if we're all being honest with ourselves. Sextus was perfectly right."
"If you want to cast me as the villain, do it," said the captain. "I'm trying to save our lives. You're giving in to chaos. There are rules, Third."
"On the contrary," Ianthe said, "you've amply demonstrated that there are no rules whatsoever. There's only the challenge and how it's answered."
When she looked at her sister's stricken face, Corona was somewhere beyond fury and shame now and had lost every atom of her poise. She only said, quite softly,
"This is for you, dear. Don't be picky. This may be the only chance we have. Don't feel bad, sweetheart. What can you do?"
Corona's face changed. The struggle gave way to exhaustion, but at the same time, there was a weird relief in her. Her teeth were gritted, but one of her hands tangled in her sister's long, thin, ivory blonde locks, and she drew their heads close.
"I can do nothing," she said,
and Gideon realized they'd just lost her somehow.
"Then let's do this together. I need you."
"I need you," echoed her twin, rather piteously.
Camilla hauled herself up to stand. She had taken Palamedes' handkerchief and bound her arm, but the blood was already showing through, and she held it in a funny way. Palamedes looked close to vibrating out of his skin from fear or anger.
"Right," she said laconically. "Second round."
But Gideon was experiencing one powerful emotion. Being sick of everyone's shit. She unsheathed her sword. She slid her gauntlet over her hand and tightened the wrist straps with her teeth. And she looked over her shoulder at Harrowhark, who was apparently breaking out of a blue funk to experience her own dominant emotion of, "Oh, not again." Gideon silently willed her necromancer to put her knuckle bones where her mouth was, and for the first time in her life, for the first real time, do what Gideon needed her to do. And Harrowhark rose to the occasion like an evening star.
"The ninth house will represent the sixth house," she said, sounding cold and bored, as though this had been her plan all along.
Gideon wanted to sing. Gideon wanted to dance her up and down the corridor. She broke out in a broad, unnervingly un-ninth smile, and Nibirius Tern, who had gone from greasy villainy to aggrieved caution, was having to force his smirk. Ianthe just looked a little amused. "The plot congeals. Since when has the ninth been bosom with the sixth?"
"We're not."
"Then," Harrowhark said in the exact sepulchral tones of Marshal Crux,
"death first to vultures and scavengers."
Unable to bear it any longer, Jean-Marie hopped up on the table too. She held her shining fourth house rapier before her, the beautiful navy and silver fretwork of her dagger gripped in an altogether professional way at her hip. Although her puffy eyes and corrugated, unbrushed hair proved that she had not slept more than a few hours in the last few days, she looked intimidatingly ready. Gideon was coming to the conclusion that despite an overworked pituitary gland, there was really something in the Chatter name after all.
"Once you face her, you face the fourth house," she said ringingly. "Fidelity and the Emperor!"
Nibiru's turn, sheathed his sword in his neat gleaming knife, rolling his eyes so hard that they ought to have fallen backward into his sinuses. He sighed explosively and swung himself down from the table, wiping that stupid curl off his forehead with an airy head toss. "I should have stayed home and gotten married," he said resentfully. "As though anyone was even offering," snapped Ianthe.
"If you have all finished," said Silas
Soctokiseron, with his deep, tyrannically servile politeness,
"Brother Asht and I are going to go and look for Protesilaus the Seventh. He is, after all, still missing."
"Which will somehow involve trying those keys you've taken in doors you've never been able to open," said Palamedes. "What a coincidence."
"I have no interest in talking to you any more," said Silas. "The warden of the sixth house is an unfinished inbred who passed an examination. Your companion is a mad dog, and I doubt her legal claim to the title of Cavalier Primary. I would not even bother to thrash her. Enjoy the patronage of the Shadow Cult while it lasts. I am sorry that it came to this. Brother Asht, we leave."
When they dispersed, it was with the manner of people reluctantly turning their backs on their enemies. The Eighth Master swept out with his cavalier like a legion retreating from a battlefield. The second, the unsteady cavalier supported by the captain's arm, looked even more so, with something of the tattered refugee thrown in. The three houses that were left looked at one another. Palamedes rounded on Harrowhark, his hands bloody and his shining eyes a little wild. He had torn off his spectacles, and there were greasy red thumbprints over the lenses.
"There's only one more key," he said.
Harrow frowned.
"One more to claim?"
"No,
they've all been claimed. I've been through every challenge except the one I won't play ball with."
Harrow's frown deepened fractionally, but Gideon was putting the pieces together. So too, apparently, was the necromantic teen, Isaac.
"If there's only one of each key," he said slowly, "what happens when you do a challenge someone else already completed?"
Palamedes shrugged.
"Nothing. I mean, you can do the challenge, but you get nothing at the end of it."
Jean-Marie said, "So it's just a huge waste of time." And Gideon could not imagine how she'd have felt after the avulsion room if the plinth at the other end had been empty.
"Sort of. The challenge itself is still instructional. It makes you think about things in a new way, right, Nona Jessimus?"
"The challenges so far," said Harrow carefully, "have encouraged me to consider some striking possibilities."
"Right, but it's like, imagine if someone showed you a new sword move or whatever, but then you never actually got to sit down and read up on how it worked. It might give you ideas, but you wouldn't really learn it. Do you follow?"
Jean-Marie, Gideon and Camilla all stared at him.
"What?" he said. "The sixth learns sword fighting out of a book," said Jean-Marie, horrified.
"No," put in Camilla. "The warden just hasn't been to Swordsman's Spire since he was 5 and got lost."
"Okay, okay."
Palamedes put his hands out. He was still holding the blood-stained spectacles.
"That was clearly an inapposite comparison, but..."
"A challenge, taken purely as a necromantic exercise," said Harrow calmly, "suggests many things but reveals none. Only the underlying theorem can lay bare the mystery."
"And the theorems are behind the locked doors," Isaac said meditatively. "Aren't they? You need the keys for the doors, or you're screwed." Everyone's attention was on the two shitty teens. They both looked back,
with no small scorn, all grief, uncombed hair and stud earrings.
"We know about the doors," said Jean-Marie. "We've seen the doors, and people go through the doors." "Well, what else could we do?" she added, somewhat defensively. "If we hadn't been trailing everybody, it would have been that creep Ianthe Tridentarius, and she's stalking everyone, believe me."
"And trailing differs from stalking, how?"
"Because the Force doesn't stalk."
"Nothing was preventing you from getting your facility key," said Palamedes. Isaac said emptily, "Abigail said to wait for her."
Gideon did not know how much the Sixth knew about the keys they'd amassed so far, or what they'd learned of the labs and the studies, how much they knew of the theorems. Palamedes was nodding, thoughtful.
"Well, you've come to the right conclusion. Behind the doors, there are studies, and all eight, there's eight, obviously, one per house, contain notes on the relevant theorem. All eight theorems presumably add up to some kind of,
Megatheorem,
supplied Isaac, who, after all, was like 13. Megatheorem, he agreed. The key to the secrets of Lictorhood. Jean-Marie Chateau's brain had obviously ground forward, struggling past confusion and puberty hormones, to some slowly formed conclusion.
"Wait. Go back, Sixth House," she demanded. "What did you mean by one more key?"
Palamedes drummed his fingers on the table.
"Well, forgive me the explanation, Ninth. I know you've been keeping track of the keys." "Ha ha ha," thought Gideon. She hadn't. "But I couldn't work out how many keys Lady Septimus had. I knew she had at least one. But when Octokizeron convinced her to hand them over," he freighted convinced with such heavy scorn it ought to have fallen through the floor, "he accidentally showed us her card. She had two. That means there's one left that I haven't accounted for, and we've got to account for it."
"We need to find the seventh cav," added Camilla.
He nodded. "Yes. And we also have to work out who the hell's in the incinerator. Ianthe Tridentarius was right, a sentence I don't like saying, in that there's more than one person in there."
Isaac said, "I have a duty to find out who killed Magnus and Abigail, first and foremost."
"You're right, Baron Tetteris," said Palamedes warmly, "but trust me. I think answering those three questions will help us quite considerably in solving that mystery. Ninth, Protesilaus was still down in the facility as of last night."
Hera looked at him blankly.
"How do you know?"
"We saw him go in," said the fourth as one.
And Isaac added,
"After we eavesdropped on you and the sixth. Good for you."
"But it makes sense, too. Lady Septimus said he didn't come back. And when we saw her keyring just now, it only had challenge keys, no hatch key. She must have given that to him so he could access the facility by himself, although why, I still don't know. I bet you the whole of my library's physical sciences section that he's still down there. It would be impossible for someone to bring him up without being seen."
"Then we need to go down and look," said Jean-Marie, visibly impatient at the lack of action. "Let's go!"
"Don't be so forth," said Palamedes. "We should split up. We're fighting a battle on two fronts here. Frankly, I would not leave Lady Septimus unguarded sans cavalier with just the first house to guard her."
Harrowhark said, "Her keys are gone. What's the attraction now?"
Camilla said, "Vulnerability."
"Yes, it can't just be a game of keys, Nona Jesimus. Why did Magnus Quinn and Abigail Pent die when they had nothing on them but a facility key in their own good selves? Why has Protesilaus gone missing when the most he would have had was his facility key? Is he still down there? Who died before this challenge even began? And then there's the issue of the other houses. I do not know about you, Reverend Daughter, but until Cam's healed up, I plan on wetting myself lavishly."
Isaac gave a rather lame and high-pitched giggle. Camilla said gruffly,
Warden is just my right hand. Hark at her. Just your right hand. My right hand, more like. God, Cam, I've never been so scared in all my life.
Harrow Hark ignored this cavalier necromancer banter and cleared her throat pointedly. Septimus wants guarding. Her cavalier should be found. What do you suggest?
The fourth house stays with the Lady Dulcinea, said Palamedes, slipping his glasses back over his long nose. Gideon the Ninth stays with them as backup. You, I, and Camilla go down to the facility and see if we can locate Protesilaus.
There was more than one bewildered stare aimed his way. His own cavalier looked at him as though he had taken leave of his senses, and Hera yanked her hood off her head painfully as though to relieve her feelings.
Sextus, she said, as though to a very stupid child. Your necromancer is wounded. I could kill the both of you and take your keys, or just take your keys, which would be worse. Why would you willingly put yourself in that position?
Because I am placing my trust in you, said Palamedes. Yes, even though you're a black anchorite and loyal only to the numinous forces of the locked tomb, if you'd wanted my keys through chicanery, you would have challenged me for them a long time ago.
I don't trust Silas Octokizeron, and I don't trust Ianthe Tridentarius, but I trust the Reverend Daughter Hera Hark Nona Jesimus.
Beneath the paint, Gideon could see that Hera had changed colours a number of times through this little speech. She went from being a rather ashen skeleton to a skeleton who was improbably green around the gills. To an outsider, it would have just been a blank ninth house mask twinging from dark mystery to cryptic mystery, giving nothing away. But to Gideon, it was like watching fireworks go off. Her necromancer said gruffly,
"Fine, but we'll watch over the seventh house. I'm not going down the ladder with your invalid cavalier."
Palamedes said, "Fine, perhaps that's better use of our talents anyway. Fourth, are you all right to go with Gideon the Ninth? I realise I am presupposing that our motives all align, but all I can assure you is that they really do. Search the facility, and if you find him, or come up short, come back to us and we'll move from there. Get in and get out."
The bleary, necromantic teen looked to his bleary cavalier. Jean-Marie said immediately,
"We'll go with the Ninth. She's all right. The stories about the Ninth House seem probably bullshit anyway."
She's all right? Gideon's heart billowed, despite the fact that she had her own suspicions as to why her necromancer didn't want her sitting with Dulcinea Septimus, and they were all extremely petty. The Sixth House adept adjusted his glasses again and said,
"Sorry, Ninth Cavalier. I should ask you your thoughts on all of this."
She cracked the joints in the back of her neck as she considered the question, stretching out the ligaments, popping her knuckles.
He urged again, "Thoughts?"
Gideon said, "Did you know that if you put the first three letters of your last name with the first three letters of your first name, you get sex pal?" The dreadful teens both stared with eyes so wide you could have marched skeletons straight through them.
Do you talk?" said Isaac.
"You'll wish she didn't," said Camilla. Her wound had opened again. Palamedes was searching his pockets and the sleeves of his robe for more handkerchiefs to staunch it. As the fourth conducted a quick conversation in what they thought were whispers, Hera came to Gideon and unwillingly passed over the great iron ring that their keys jingled on, bodies almost pressing, so that she could keep them out of sight of Palamedes.
"Come back with these, or having choked on them," she whispered. "And don't get complacent around the fourth. Never work with children, Griddle. Their prefrontal cortexes aren't developed. Now."
Gideon put her arms around Harrow Hark. She lifted her up off the ground just an inch and squeezed her in an enormous hug before either she or Harrow knew what she was about. Her necromancer felt absurdly light in her grip, like a bag of bird's bones. She had always thought, when she bothered to think, that Hera would feel cold, as everything in the Ninth felt cold. No, Hera Nonagesimus was feverishly hot. Well, you couldn't think that amount of ghastly thoughts without generating energy. Hang on. What the hell was she doing?
Thanks for backing me up, my midnight haggit, said Gideon, placing her back down.
Hera had not struggled, but gone limp, like a prey animal feigning death. She had the same glassy thousand-yard stare and stilled breathing. Gideon belatedly wished to be exploded, but reminded herself to act cool.
I appreciate it, my crepuscular queen. It was good. You were good.
Hera, at a total loss for words, eventually managed the rather pathetic,
"Don't make this weird, Nav," and stalked off after Palamedes.
Jean-Marie sidled up alongside Gideon, rather shyly. Isaac was parasitically drifting with her. He was in the process of braiding her curly hair safely up with a tatty blue ribbon. She said, "Have you two been paired a very long time?"
"Don't just ask them that," her necromancer hissed. "It's a weird thing to ask."
"Shut up! It was just a question."
Gideon contemplated the growing braid and the sight of Palamedes squeezing the noxious contents of a blue dropper into Camilla's wound and Camilla kneeing him with beautiful abruptness in the thigh. Herohark lurked next to them, pointedly not looking at Gideon, head hidden deep inside her second-best hood. She still didn't understand what she was meant to do or think or say, what duty really meant between a cavalier and a necromancer, between a necromancer and a cavalier.
"It feels like forever," she said honestly.
Gideon slipped her dark-tinted glasses out of her pocket and slid them on, and she felt better for it.
"Come on. Let's go."